spend just a few minutes on social media, and you'll see a highly filtered picture of some supremely fit person who's just climbed to the pinnacle of some mountain right at sunrise and thrusting her arms into the air triumphantly. And then somebody from the comfort of their cushy office chair puts a few words to this inspirational photo to make a meme, spouting some pseudo-profound nonsense to change your life. You see, amidst the cute cats and the targeted ads, social media has become a highlight reel of quote photos, inspirational pap, and psychological rubbish, dispensing so-called wisdom one meme at a time. You'll see such nuggets as slow down and savor the moment, immediately followed by hustle like your Beyonce. Now, how are you supposed to do both? Other supposed wise proverbs include, start visualizing what you want, then say no to anything that isn't it. And this genius advice, buy the plane ticket, quit the job, plan the trip, wander into the unknown, open your heart, take the leap. Now, do you know what would actually happen if you said no to everything you didn't want to do? In fact, I think with the pandemic right now, all of us are doing a lot of things we would rather not do. And is it really a good idea to take a big trip with no income and no plan? Then there was this buzzword-filled baloney, embrace your expansion. What does that even mean? I mean, is that post-Thanksgiving dinner advice? If you want real wisdom and real wise proverbs, the place to go isn't Instagram or Facebook. It is the biblical book of Proverbs. And Proverbs is where we will find this week's core verse. Now, like Psalms, which we've just been in for several weeks, Proverbs is a book of poetry. But whereas Psalms is a collection of songs, a book of worship, Proverbs is a book of wisdom, a collection of wise sayings and truisms that are eminently applicable to life. Now, Proverbs was written by Solomon, son of David, heir to the throne, third king of Israel. And Solomon has this reputation in history of being the wisest man to ever live. And for good reason. You see, God once offered Solomon a blank check. In 2 Chronicles 1, God asks him, ask what I shall give you. Now, Solomon could have asked for anything that he wanted. Wealth, power, fame, anything. But what Solomon asked for was wisdom. In 2 Chronicles 1:10, Solomon says, give me now wisdom and knowledge to go out and come in before this people. For who can govern this people of yours, which is so great? And in fact, 1 Kings 4:29 tells us that God, quote, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure and breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore. Now, out of that wisdom and out of the inspiration of the Holy Spirit comes the book of Proverbs. Now, Proverbs itself is a masterclass in wisdom, and it tells us how the principles of wisdom can lead to success and mastery in all the major areas of life, such as personal relationships, business, family life, community life. Now, Solomon opens his course on wisdom by telling us what the true source of wisdom is. Proverbs 1:7, our core verse for this week, says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now, this statement isn't just an introduction to Proverbs, but really all of the biblical books of poetry. This thought is repeated two more times in Proverbs, as well as in Psalms and the book of Job. This is why all of the biblical books of poetry are known together as wisdom literature. Now, two key words here in our core verse, knowledge and wisdom. Now, knowledge is more than just book smarts, getting the right answer on the test. The Hebrew word that's used here has to do with insight and understanding. And the word used here for wisdom can mean wisdom, skill, shrewdness. My Bible dictionary defines it, quote, as the ability to judge correctly and to follow the best course of action based on knowledge and understanding. Now, don't confuse biblical wisdom with education or intelligence. In fact, you could have a very educated person, a person with an extremely high IQ, yet they could still be a fool. The focus here is on the practical use of knowledge. Biblical wisdom is knowing what to do with what you know. Wisdom is the ability to, and the ability to make the right choices at the right time. Now, many of us are really good at making the right choices. We just make them too late to do any good. Others of us are really good at making choices at the right time. We just keep making the wrong choices. Sometimes biblical wisdom is simply the right skills to manage life effectively. We would call it street smarts. Ecclesiastes 10:10, for instance, says, if the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. Wisdom has the ability of giving success. All right? They're just simply the street smarts of sharpen your axe before you go cut wood. Abraham Lincoln put it this way, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree and I will spend the first four sharpening the axe. This brand of wisdom fits in the work smarter, not harder category. But biblical wisdom goes much deeper than just practical life lessons to moral life principles, understanding how life and relationships really work, and making the best decisions based on a proper understanding of the spiritual and moral realities of life. Theologian J.I. Packer defines wisdom this way. Wisdom is the power to see and the inclination to choose the best and highest goal together with the surest means of attaining it. But perhaps the best definition of wisdom is this. Wisdom is the quality that keeps you from getting into situations where you need it. But this proverb isn't so much about what wisdom is, but where wisdom is to be found. Where does it start? If I could paraphrase Proverbs 1:7, it would be this. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. Now, if you ask most people to complete this sentence, the beginning of wisdom is, how would they fill in the blank? Now, chances are they're not going to say the fear of the Lord. And notice, it doesn't say that the beginning of wisdom is knowledge or education, or intelligence, or reading the right books, or going to the right schools, or Google, right? And even as Christians, we might be tempted to say, well, the beginning of wisdom is the love of the Lord, or the knowledge of the Lord, or the obedience of the Lord, but not fear. Why does Solomon tell us that wisdom springs from the fear of God? Now, we tend to see fear as a bad thing. We dismiss fear as a weakness. We don't want to be fearful. We don't want to be seen as fearful. We try to avoid that ever-tightening knot in the pit of our stomach. We want to be fearless. But the truth is that you and I were hardwired for fear. God created us with a healthy sense of fear. An entire section of our brains is devoted to our fear response. The problem is that, like everything else, is that sin has twisted this healthy fear into something that is harmful and destructive. Simply put, too often, we fear the wrong things. Now, fear is good when we have, say, a fight, flight, or freeze response to a genuinely life-threatening situation. But what about when we are overcome by fear of something that's merely unfamiliar or uncomfortable? Fight or flight isn't the best response then, but that's still what we often do. There is good fear and bad fear. We learn at a very young age, for instance, not to touch a hot stove. And a healthy sense of fear keeps us from doing lots of stupid things. A healthy sense of fear, for instance, lets a husband know that everything is not fine, even though his wife says fine. Right? That's good fear. But some of us carry unhealthy fears that are way out of proportion to the actual risk posed. I remember a girl that I dated in college. She was very intelligent. You would never expect this of her, but she harbored this secret fear. We had gone out to see the movie Home Alone, and we got to the scene where Kevin's brother had the spider, and the spider gets out. And this girl almost jumped out of her skin. She went into full-on panic and completely lost it. I remember another time we had a babysitter watching our girls when they were younger, and she was deathly afraid of bees. And there was one bee, one little honeybee that got in the house, right, full-on meltdown. She had to call her dad, who came over to our house to kill the one bee. And a lot of us have these hidden fears, whether it's of elevators or relationships or heights or dentists, all right? And these fears can be debilitating, all right? So good fear you want, bad fear you don't. Good fear places respect where it should go. Bad fear, though, is afraid of things that it doesn't need to be. Good fear asks, what can I do about what is happening? But bad fear asks, well, what if this thing that I can do nothing about, what if it happens? Good fear drives you. Bad fear stops you. Good fear moves you. It gives you the extra adrenaline you need to act in a time of crisis. Bad fear paralyzes you so that you can't act when you need to. Good fear inspires self-motivation, but bad fear crushes you with self-doubt. Good fear helps you do a good job. Bad fear keeps you from doing any job at all. Good fear focuses you on what matters most, but bad fear distracts you, squirrel, from what matters most. Good fear makes you more aware of what's going on around you. Bad fear blinds you to what's going on around you. Good fear helps you in the short run. Bad fear hurts you in the long run. Now, even in the coronavirus, we've seen both good fear and bad fear, right? Good fear is things like taking proper precautions, washing your hands, keeping your distance. But bad fear, hoarding 30 cases of toilet paper, buying so much food that it goes bad before you can use it. Right? Now, understanding the difference between good fear and bad fear is crucial to understanding the fear of the Lord. Now, the truth is this, that we all fear something. And I'm not just talking about the phobias that haunt us like some horror movie serial killer. You know, needles, flying, enclosed spaces, things that go bump in the night. But I'm talking about fears like never being significant, living a life that doesn't matter, or always being alone. And some of us carry some very deeply rooted fears, maybe of losing our health or losing our wealth, right? And when fears like these get moved to the top of the fear food chain, that's when we begin to make bad life decisions. We make unwise or foolish choices. Right, and this is where the fear of the Lord comes in. Now, the fear of the Lord is one of the most repeated phrases in Proverbs, appearing 14 times altogether, and it appears 13 more times throughout the rest of the Bible. So let's be clear about what we mean by fear of the Lord, because there's more than one Hebrew word that's translated as fear into English. For instance, there is pachad, which is a projected or imagined fear, and that's not the word used here. The word used here is yirah, which conveys the ideas of reverence, fear, worship, awesomeness. It could be defined as, quote, what we experience when we suddenly find ourselves in the presence of considerably more power than we're used to. Now, when you apply that idea to God, that's a holy fear. Derek Kidner, in his commentary on Proverbs, calls this kind of fear, quote, a worshipful submission. Kyle and Delitch likewise call it a reverential subordination. Dave Bland calls it an apprehension in the presence of an awesome power. Now, we experience something very similar whenever we are in the presence of something overwhelming, right? Maybe you've met a personal hero, a sports star, or an artist that you really admire whose works have really touched your life, you know? And you've always thought, wow, I'd really love to meet that person. If I could just, you know, ask them one question, right? And then you finally meet them, and what happens, right? You're tongue-tied. You're afraid of saying something stupid. You're afraid of embarrassing yourself. And the same thing might happen if you meet somebody in a very powerful position, like the president. Or people think, you know, wow, I would just love to sit down and have lunch with Warren Buffett or Bill Gates and just be able to pick their brains for a few minutes. And yet you sit down with them and you don't know what to say. All right? I experienced a bit of this. One of my lifelong dreams had been to drive a NASCAR Cup stock car. And several years ago, my father and I, we paid for this NASCAR driving experience, and we got to wheel a cup car around Kansas Speedway. It was awesome. But for a moment, when I first got into that car, and all of a sudden I realized the power that was there within my grip, there was a holy fear there. I'm sure Terry or the guys on his crew for the power company experienced this kind of holy fear the first time they worked on a line that had 300,000 volts flowing through it. This kind of fear is to touch a great power and know that if you don't properly respect that power could destroy you. The closest comparison I've ever had to this kind of holy fear is when I visited the Grand Canyon. You've maybe experienced the same thing at the Grand Canyon, or if you've been rock climbing, or you hike to the top of a mountain and you walked out to the edge of a ledge that went straight down several hundred feet. Now, from a few yards away, the view is breathtaking, and it's beautiful, and you want to get closer, but with each step you take, your heart rate increases, your knees begin to shake, but still you step because you want to take in all you can. But by the time you get to the edge, your stomach is doing somersaults, your head begins to swim, your mouth is dry, your palms are sweaty, you're drawn to it, but you want to run away at the same time. A proper view of the presence of God is very much like that. Just multiply it. It's beautiful and scary all at the same time. You love him for who he is, but you fear him for what he could do. Now, a proper fear of the Lord doesn't mean, you know, you're cowering in the corner, trembling in terror, but make no mistake, there is trepidation there. Now, because of God's mercy through Jesus, Hebrews 4:16 says that we can, quote, approach the throne of grace with confidence. But Philippians 2:12 still cautions us, quote, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, end quote. So let me give you three reasons real quick why fear of the Lord is where wisdom starts. First, fearing God opens the door to God's love. You will never properly experience God's love if you don't first fear him. Now, I know this might sound counterintuitive to you. We might be thinking of 1 John 4:18, perfect love casts out fear. But that's talking about an unholy fear, the kind of fear that comes when we fear other things above God. It's the irrational phobia kind of fear. The Bible, though, also talks about a holy fear and a godly love working hand in hand. Love and fear aren't on opposite ends of the spectrum. They can work together. For instance, Psalm 33:8 says this, "Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope in his steadfast love." Notice how our experience of his love is precipitated by our holy fear of him. Now, this doesn't mean that God won't love us until we first fear him, but it does mean that we won't feel and experience that love until we fear him. Likewise, Psalm 103:11 declares, "As high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his steadfast love toward those who fear him." Here again, the experience of love preceded by fear. A holy fear of God is a key that unlocks the door to our experiencing his love. If you have no fear of God, then his love, his kindness won't mean anything to you. The higher our reverence, our awe, our respect, our fear of God, then the greater our experience of his love. Now, this is the great truth that is so readily missed by parents who just want to be their kids' best buddies, you know, and not be willing to be the parent, the authority figure who offers discipline and structure, because they forget that a healthy fear fueled by respect and awe precedes the experience of love. Now, the Bible uses this parent-child relationship to describe this dynamic. Psalm 103:13 says, "As a father shows compassion to his children, so the Lord shows compassion to those who fear him." Right? Fear preceding compassion. Mark Moore uses the same image in the Core 52 book. Quote, "Remember when you were a kid and your father threw you to the moon? The very strength that launched you into the air also comforted you in the dark." A God that isn't big enough to fear, isn't big enough to save. Think of dad throwing the child several feet into the air. Now, it terrifies mom. You know, dads know best to do it when they're not in the room. But it delights the child, and she cries, she squeals, "Again, again!" The child is delighted because she trusts in her father's power completely. She respects his strength fully. You see, her trust in daddy's strength is greater than her fear that he'll drop her. And this is why mom is terrified, right? Because she knows that daddy isn't perfect. Right? She knows that he could drop her baby. She knows about the old motorcycle injury in his shoulder. You know, what if it acts up at the wrong time? She has her own scar on the back of her head when she was dropped by her own father as a toddler. That same baby that loved being thrown into the air by her father, who trusted him completely, experiences a strange psychosis, though, somewhere around the age of 15 or 16, right? For a few years, she loses all respect for her dad. He's gone from he can do no wrong to he can do no right. And as long as she has no respect, no healthy fear of her father, she will also be numb to his love and kindness, and she'll receive no delight in him. Right? The same thing is true of our relationship with God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom because it opens us to his love. Secondly, fearing God makes you fearless. The fear of God keeps all of our other fears at bay. You see, when fearing God is at the top of your list, then all of your other fears fall into place. I find it interesting that with all of the times that the Bible tells us to fear the Lord, the most often repeated command in the Bible is fear not, or do not be afraid. 70 times we are told to not be afraid. You see, when you fear God, you will fear nothing else. Do you realize that most of our struggles with fear come from the fact that we fear the wrong things? Our fear priorities are all messed up. And overcoming fear is often not about not fearing the wrong things, but in learning to fear the right thing. And when you realize that God is bigger than everything else you're afraid of, there's nothing to be afraid of anymore. Fearing God makes you fearless. Thirdly, fearing God fosters holiness. Right? A fear of the Lord inspires obedience. When you fear someone, you obey them. Proof in point, what do you do when you see a police car in your rearview mirror? Right? Now, chances are you don't wave. Right? You don't speed up. You instinctively tap on the brakes. You double check your speedometer. You make sure you're obeying the speed limit. Because why? Fear inspires obedience. I know some of you are objecting at this point. You're saying, but shouldn't we obey God because we love him, not because we fear him? And yes, ultimately, as we grow in our faith, love becomes the prime mover. But remember, love and fear work together. They are partners, right? Being motivated by fear doesn't mean that you aren't also motivated by love, right? Now, married people understand this instinctively, assuming, of course, that you actually love your husband or your wife, right? There are a lot of things that I do for my wife that I'd rather not do. But because I love her, I do them for her. Because I love her. But let me be honest, and husbands know I'm speaking the truth here. I'm not only doing it out of some pure, unfiltered love, but I'm also motivated by fear. I fear hurting her feelings. I fear disappointing her. I fear letting her down. And I fear the argument if I don't. All right? I do it because I love her and I fear. Right? They go together. And wives, I'm sure that you do the same thing. Also remember that it says here that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, or the beginning of wisdom. It's where wisdom starts. Right? Fear isn't the whole story. Right? It doesn't begin and end with fear. It isn't all about fear. It is only the start. But one thing fear certainly does is it fosters holiness. It motivates us to do what we ought to do. And when we obey the Lord, we are making wise choices. That's the beginning of wisdom. Now, the fear of the Lord is something that as Christians that we shouldn't downplay or hide from. I think we need to embrace it because it's how we enjoy his goodness. Psalm 38:4 makes this clear. Listen to these two verses. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. All right, we love this verse. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him, still loving it. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack. Did you hear that? Experiencing his goodness, right? Everything that we love about God, his goodness, his refuge, his supply, all stem from fearing him. Now, there's a lot of things in my life that I fear, and because I fear them, I can enjoy them, right? I enjoy the electricity that flows through my house, right? I enjoy being able to just walk into a room, flip a switch, and illumination, all right? Yet, when I had to rewire some switches in my house, guess what? I was afraid of that power. I feared it. I switched off the power. I used proper tools. I used the correct wire and the right kind of connectors. Why? Because I fear the power that flows through their wires. And that fear is what enables me to enjoy it. I enjoy my car. I enjoy being able to go where I want, when I want, the sense of freedom and mobility that it gives me. But I also know that 1.5 tons of steel, glass, and plastic powered by 200 horsepower at more than 60 miles an hour could kill me at a moment's notice. I fear that power. I respect it immensely. And so it's why I stay between the lines. It's why I keep my hands on the wheel. It's why I watch where I'm going. It's why I don't text and drive. And because of that healthy fear, I love driving. I enjoy it. And it gets me where I need to go. So bottom line, fear the Lord, live wisely, and enjoy God, and enjoy life. Thank you. And God bless.